You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at WPCouncil.org.
Well, now
troll on in.
Troll on in and maybe catch some or not in the case of what we're going to talk about today. There is, as many of you know in previous shows we've been talking about, some proposed changes to the green sea turtle rules. And it's a big question, and there's all kinds of moving parts. And once again, I'm pleased to spend some time with Asuka Ishizaki. She is the protected species coordinator of the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, and it just so happens that this is one of the species that she's taking a good look at. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the show again.
It is so nice to see you again. You know, I know that before we even sort of let people know how they can react and how they can input into these decision-making process. I think it's interesting, and I'm sure you've learned this in your time here, that, boy, these turtles mean a lot of things to a lot of people. You know, for somebody's out there surfing, they just like to see them because they're magnificent animals, you know? And when somebody's out there, you know, looking for certain kinds of limu, they're worried, oh, there's turtles eating all my limu. And there's some people who say, well, the turtles may be eating all your limu, but we want to eat them all up. It's fascinating, this green sea turtle question, isn't it?
It is, and I think it's a symbolic animal no matter where you go, and it's had such a close tie with human history all over the place, including in Hawaii and across the Pacific Islands,
mm-hmm.
through food, through cultural meanings, and nowadays, you know, through environmental movements, things like that. And so it does elicit a lot of different emotions and opinions.
One of the things that we hear about a lot is sustainability, and in previous shows, as you know, when we talk about fish catch reports and the allowable take and catch limits and all that stuff, there's a lot of things going on here with turtles, and there are a lot of people that say, well, I don't know why there's such a big fuss, because, man, I see more turtles than I've ever seen in my life before. Well, they've been protected for a while. That's probably the reason.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, the past 40 years or so, they've mm-hmm. been federally protected, and mm-hmm. as a result of that, and as a result of the prohibition on all the commercial yeah. takes, they've come back a lot. And so I think the starting point for a lot of people's memory is that yeah. they were very rare animals. And
sure.
I think people are still trying to adapting to this idea that they've become more common and becoming more recovered.
I do know, Asuka, that we could talk a lot about some of the other conditions about these beautiful, beautiful animals. And, you know, you see pictures of them in calendars and on walls, and they're just so fantastic. But there's a lot of people that didn't know who was to blame, and they thought for a while it was storm runoff or it was human contact. A lot of our turtles go on this cycle of these horrible tumors that they get on them. I know that that's not what we're here to talk about today, but I know it comes up a lot. What are those lesions or whatever they call them?
Yeah, they're called a fibropapilloma, and they're tumors that are caused by basically a herpes virus.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really know how they occur, but what we do know from a lot of the studies that's taken on in Hawaii is they peaked in about the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, they've declined. You probably see them in certain places a lot still, but we do know they haven't really hurt the recovery of the turtles here.
There are some that go swim with the turtles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of them. And there's a couple of turtles, and as you know, out in Hawaii Kai, in our neck of the woods, there's a place called Turtles. And it's because, duh, there's turtles there. You see them all the time. But even off Waikiki, there's a lot of turtles. Do they sometimes give people a mistaken impression? Well, there's really plenty. Maybe we should start thinning them out.
There is. I think the perception that a lot of people have is there's too many turtles. And it's probably true that there's a lot of turtles. And there's been a lot of scientific studies that's looked at how the reefs are doing. And there's been a few studies that's shown in certain places off Kona, off the Kona side of the Big Island, for example, that they may be reaching carrying capacity, or they have reached carrying capacity.
That's
not
some
everywhere.
That's some of the things that I want to kind of explain. And one of the reasons is, if you come upon a pristine, uninhabited, never before seen island, there's an ecosystem that's going there. And if it's one that has turtles in it, you wonder, well, why aren't there so many? Why haven't they ruined it? There's some sort of a balance going on, right? And I'm not sure that we understand that. So maybe you can explain this, what this proposal is all about, this thing they call maintaining the status quo, whatever that means.
Yeah, so the proposal came out, I think it was in March. So it was partly in response to the petition that was submitted by the Hawaiian Association of Hawaiian Civic Clubs mm-hmm. to designate the Hawaii population as this thing called the distinct population segment, mm-hmm. and then to delist that that population, the Hawaii population.
Yeah, so gang, you have to understand this. When we talked about in past programs, even recently with Eric Kingman and others, sometimes we talk about, you know, what is an indigenous local product and what is coming in from far places away. So what the Hawaiian clubs and things have determined is that these are our turtles, that, you know, they live here. And they, isn't it very similar to what people are saying? Well, ahi aren't migratory. We have our own ahi as well as yellowfin coming in from other places. But doesn't also science suggest that these turtles do travel away from Hawaii great distances to have their young?
Great distances, but still staying in Hawaii, and that's the scientific conclusion that we've known for a long time, and the federal government also agreed with in responding mm-hmm. to this petition. The part that they didn't agree with was this idea of delisting them.
Yeah.
And so as a result of them doing this review, they've come to the conclusion that the honu needs to be continue to be listed as threatened mm-hmm. under the Endangered Species Act, or the ESA.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that because most of the nesting for the honu population now is happening on French frigate shoals, where the sea level is only several meters above the island itself. The atoll itself is only about, you know, several meters above
sea
level.
Which simply means that in the future, if the island continues along the path that it is, these maybe thousands of years of turtle migrations, they'd get to where they couldn't breed.
That's what they're concerned about, mm-hmm. and that's why they're saying that we need to maintain these on the threatened list and mm-hmm. keep them protected.
To explain how this came about from a strictly scientific perspective during the last round of council meetings. You digest all of this stuff, and obviously then the council comes up with the results of their studies and their findings and therefore their position.
Yeah, so we went through these discussions, not just in the council meeting, but leading up to the council meeting. We mm-hmm. had a number of our advisory groups take a look at it. We had our advisory panel discuss this. We have a protected species advisory committee that has sea turtle experts and other species experts.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at it and discussed it. And then we had our scientific and statistical committee look at it and discuss this too. And so we went through this vetting process of looking at all this information, mm-hmm. have them discuss it and say, okay, scientifically speaking, what does this mean? Are these conclusions valid? You know, what do our stakeholders really think about?
Yeah. Is there, Asuka, in your opinion, it's hard not to be emotional. I mean, I don't care how scientific you are about doing statistics and everything else, but at the end of the day, when you've made your studies, and I know that some of these studies are long and protracted, they're not overnight, you know, here's a clipboard, go count the whales for one day. It's some pretty good science. I would imagine thereby an opinion by somebody that's doing that collecting is valid. I mean, it's a really worthwhile, a valuable opinion.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think the scientists that were involved in the review, I think we're looking at it from the scientific side.
Mm-hmm.
But as NOAA Fisheries and Fish and Wildlife Service, who are the two agencies making this decision jointly, when they're looking at this, they take the scientific information and all of the mm-hmm. other considerations, the legal considerations under ESA, and then they come up with a decision. And
yeah.
So it's supposed to be scientifically based, but they have to take in other things into consideration.
You know, I'm a little worried because we do know that there's great, you know, organizations, environmental organizations, and very strong. They collect a lot of, you know, donations from their members and their supporters, and they have lobbyists, and they're pretty big. I do know that sometimes even the best intended groups rely on information that may not be coming from the right place. Are you satisfied that what the council looked at and what's been studied, you know, and vetted out, that we are in better shape than NOAA thinks we are?
I think there's a lot of pukas, if you will, mm-hmm. in the proposed rule. And I think that's
yeah.
what our advisors, our scientific committee, and the council really highlighted in their discussions,
mm-hmm.
that there needs to be additional information that's considered. There's a lot... The information that our, you know, council and our advisory groups reviewed suggests that there is not a threat to extinction to this population, and they disagreed with the federal government's finding that they need to be listed as threatened.
What, and I'm going to guess that maybe some of the environmental groups and some of the people that want this to stay the way it is are concerned that the floodgates are going to open, and pretty soon, just like when they open and close Waikiki in alternate years, you know, the day they open it up, they're all gone. We're not really talking at this point about any commercial market, are we, or anything that's going to really impact? And wouldn't there be real limitations on what, if anything, could be taken?
Absolutely. I've not met a person who's been thinking about wanting to go back to commercial take.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who, you know, talks about these limited takes, some kind of allowing some kind of take, is always talking about subsistence, very limited, well managed and monitored, that kind of thing. And that needs to be a discussion that that, you know, has to happen about how best to do that.
You know, you mentioned earlier we're talking about parts of the Big Island where the population seemingly is getting a little bit out of control and impacting the environment. Would there be some times that science would suggest, all right, this area, there's way too many turtles. We either have to pick them up and move them to another island or another beach, or we have to think about culling. I mean, as a result of maybe them threatening. What would a turtle overpopulation, what would it specifically threaten?
Well, I think in terms of what the scientists will say is what the condition is now. Mm-hmm. And the discussion beyond that moves into a management question. And I think that's where we get into a lot of these emotional,
and cultural and everything else.
And so it comes down to the question of what is the condition that we want? You know, do we want the condition where we don't hurt the turtles? That might be the end goal. Or we could be looking at a management question, you know, a goal where we have a more balanced ecosystem, whatever that balanced might mean. And so those are, you know, the discussions that need to happen, and we haven't gotten there.
Okay. Now, we do know that you've got this a status review team, and maybe you should explain how somebody that is outside of the realm of the council, or they're not a commercial fisherman, they're not a turtle catcher, they're just a person that just gets an opinion on this. What is still? Let me back up. I'm going to ask a different question. A lot of what we're talking about today is based on study periods and recommendations and everything else. It would seem to me that sometimes it might be wait. Before we make a decision, we really need to put a little bit more study in it. So let's find out maybe if the council thinks that's important, and what about if people want to put their in their two cents? How can they do that?
Well, I think, unfortunately, the process that NOAA Fisheries and Fish and Wildlife Service has to go through when they're responding to these petitions, they have to use the available information.
Yeah.
So they can't go out and do additional studies. But I think in the case of the Honu, I think there's enough information out there that helps us reach this conclusion that they aren't really threatened anymore, that we've dealt with these threats and they are doing fine and the population's come to a point where they've recovered.
Are there any, is there any confusion about what specific turtles we're talking about? I mean, you know, we know about loggerheads and how the longline industry has got to react to that. We know about hawksbill, and we know about, we are primarily here talking about the Hawaiian green sea turtle.
Yes, we are. Yeah. And with the green turtles, we rarely catch them in the Hawaii longline fishery because they're the fishery's fishing mostly outside of the range of the green turtles.
Right.
Yeah.
Where do we find the majority of the green turtles?
Most of them are foraging all around the main Hawaiian islands and also, you know, throughout the northwestern Hawaiian islands. You see them there, too. Like I said earlier, the nesting grounds are mostly in the northwestern Hawaiian islands at French Frigate Shoals, although we do see some lower-level nesting in the main Hawaiian islands.
What's their favorite menu and grocery list? What keeps this population not only growing but sustained?
Their main source of food once they grow up to be adults or sub-adults are seagrass and other limu, that sort of thing.
Right.
And so they are mostly vegetarians when they grow up, eating, foraging the things that are growing in the water.
Okay. As many people know, we've done part of the Limu Project on the show before, certainly with our Kaiaʻuluʻoha. In the community show, we talk about limu and its place in society and in culture and in medicine and everything else. And I do know that there are certain people that are really, you know, really working hard to recultivate that and get rid of invasive species. And there are some that say, well, now look, all this that we've done, the honu goes in and eats it. You know, but wasn't there at one point in time, there must have been a pretty good balance. If you're not threatening the existence of the limu will keep up with the demand.
It's really hard to say what the balance was before.
Like chicken and egg, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think in any kind of ecosystem, there's always been a wax and wane. Mm. You have populations that grow, something happens, it crashes, it comes back. That sort of cycle, I think, was a part of the natural pattern. What we see now, I think, is an environment that's changed as a result of human activity, whether we like it or not. We have runoff, we have development, all those things, you know, fresh water flowing into the ocean has changed. And those things have changed the way that limu grow. We also have invasive introduced limu species as well. But one thing that's interesting, though, is a lot of there's been some documented cases where the honu around the main Hawaiian Islands are eating land-based grass now.
Yeah, now that's another thing that I want people to really understand. I'm glad you brought that up. It was one of my questions. And that is that these animals are not restricted. Geographically restricted as some of their other animals in the sea. These animals can come up and they can go eat and they can walk around and they can do other things.
Yeah, and where they're actually eating these land-based grasses are where the grasses are, you know, kind of sticking into the water.
Right.
So they're going up near the coast and they're chomping on there. But I think they do have some kind of flexibility into not just eating native limu, but whatever forage that's available, whether that's good for their energy.
It's called hunger.
It
right?
is. I mean, it really is. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But whether that's the most nutritious thing for them to eat, we don't know, they can eat them.
You know, there's been a tremendous amount of interaction or suggested interaction between, you know, ulua fishermen and turtles. The hooks, you know, they do get hooked sometimes, and they do get taken sometimes. But I also think that there's a lot of people that are worried about, once again, going back to the limu. Wasn't there a time... And we're rebuilding these fish ponds as fast as we can because all of a sudden, way back in time, somebody said, we're running out of fish. So let's make a pen. Let's grow them. And then all of the pens disappeared. Is it sort of a similar situation where we are providing more, theoretically, more for turtles to eat? So if there's more turtles, they're going to eat more? You know what I mean? About in coming into pens and now that we're being... maybe environmentally sensitive, so we're trying to control runoff and brown water and the things that maybe we didn't really watch before that threaten the turtles, that they're no longer as threatened as they were.
It may possibly be. Mm. I think that would be a great study to look into and how, you know, the changes in our environment has changed the way that, you know, turtles are eating and how much food they have.
It's safe to say that over the millennia, the tides, and we've had ice ages, we've had, you know, we've had droughts, we've had everything else there is. And it seems that science would suggest that turtles have been around a lot longer than us, so maybe they've figured out a way to get around all those things like the rising level of the sea. And what if the French frigate Shoals goes underwater? Wouldn't they just go somewhere else?
Absolutely, and that was one of the main things that our Scientific and Statistical Committee and our Protected Species Advisory Committee members pointed out, is that these turtles are resilient.
Yeah.
They've been around a long time. They've experienced sea level rises, ice ages, you know, that sort of thing. And so just because one French frigate shoals area and one atoll area goes away doesn't mean that they're going to go belly up and die. And that's, you know, we have studies to suggest that even in the worst case scenario, sea level rise, that's been predictive. The main island, the East Island on French frigate shoals, is still going to have enough nesting area left for the green turtles to survive and go back.
I am fascinated when we see video and reports from that part of the world. I mean, how unbelievably beautiful it is. It's almost hard to think that it would be going away. I mean, it's been there for so long. But doesn't everything change? I mean, look at the main Hawaiian Islands and how you know, how old Kauai is and how new the Big Island is. I mean, that's only wouldn't a turtle just say, oh well, the Big Island beaches are better than the, let's go to the Big Island.
When you think about it, geologically speaking, most of Northwestern Hawaiian Islands is sinking, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're disappearing after you know, they were once larger islands and they've eroded and now they're in an area where they're actually sinking and disappearing because of the plate tectonics.
Yeah, and there's no way you can refute that. I mean, science will back that, you know, this is what's been happening over the last 1,000 years, and therefore, based on that, here's what's going to happen in the next. We know these things.
Yeah, and I think the concern is right around French Frigate Shoals, there's not an area right next to it, for example, that's, okay. you know, 10, 20 miles away that they can easily move to. But when you really think about the green turtles themselves and how they reproduce, think about it. They go and nest several times per nesting year. They nest every 3 to 4 years in Hawaii. They'll nest multiple times over their lifetime, and every time they go nest, they're depositing 100 eggs or so.
Right.
Not all of them survive, but that's a survival strategy that they've succeeded with over so many years.
They have a plan.
They
don't share with us, but they have a plan.
Whether they know it or not, you know, that's how they've survived. And so that allows them to go find new nesting beaches. If they go back to, you know, their nesting beach, and if it's not there anymore, very likely they're going to be able to come back the next time around and go find, you know, find new places in their lifetime. And if anything, there's going to be new generations that are coming up that have never nested in those areas before, too. And so I think there's, you know, that was one of the things that our experts pointed out, was there's biologically, there's a lot of resilience built into these green turtles.
It certainly would seem so. And gang, if you're just joining us, Asuka Ishizaki has joined us before. She is a protective species coordinator for the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. And we're sort of coming to a head on this whole issue of the green sea turtle and the status quo, talking about being listed or delisted or threatened. And so what I guess to explain to most listeners that don't know a whole lot about this issue is that what we're looking for was a waiver in Hawaii to not have our turtles as protected as they are in other places. Is that a fair way to put it? I mean, we're looking for an exception or a waiver.
I think we're looking for a better way to manage the green turtles rather than just protecting them and keeping them protected.
Because once again, let's go to the point where when one organization or one study would suggest that there are too many turtles in one area, would moving them make them stay where you move them to? I mean, these animals are extremely resilient, like you said. So if I live at Makapu and you put me in Hawaii, I'm going to go back to Makapu. I'm going to figure out a way to get back there, right?
Yeah, and I think turtles have been shown to do that. They do have preference for their foraging areas, but I don't think that's to say that they're always stuck there.
Yeah. Or their children certainly may not.
Exactly.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that was really one of the big gaps in the review that NOAA Fisheries and Fish and Wildlife Service did, was they looked at all these threats and how the honu might be threatened, but they didn't look at the positive side of how these turtles are
very
resilient.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute. Let's talk about the positive side for a second. You know, I mean, first of all, in that you deal with a lot of endangered and protected species. For instance, what similarities are there in the affinity and studies of, say, monk seals and turtles? I mean, we've got all of this energy. There's only 1,100 of them left in the world, and we have to do it. And it seems like the population is responding. But the interesting thing is they're responding among the most populous islands where you think they would be the most damaged. Are turtles the same way? I mean, are they're obviously able to live among us, because they do, and lots in big numbers.
Yeah, I think they, you know, as everybody have, a lot of people have seen around here, there's turtles everywhere.
Yeah.
And that certainly shows their ability to adapt to people being around them, especially now that they're not being hunted. They're not very afraid of people, and so they won't run away or swim away. And so they can, and I think they've always had to be that resilient and adaptable to be able to survive as long as they have.
In the best case scenario, you know, forgetting if the creek don't rise and the water's not rising, all of those things, which I know are a big, longer picture, but why would why wouldn't we get an exemption? What would be some of the things that NOAA would put up and say, no, we don't care what your studies show, this is what we're going to do?
So they're saying a couple of things. One is the fact that they concluded that they're still threatened because of the sea level rise issue, which I'll also add to say that one of the things that our advisors highlighted was how speculative their arguments were about these climate change. They didn't go and do modeling. They didn't go and look at a lot of these resilience things, like I mentioned. They were, you know, very simply saying they nest mostly on French frigate shoals. There's sea level rise. We think they might be threatened.
Therefore, this is it. And you know, see, here's the thing. Yeah, and you mentioned this before. Sometimes a lot of us complain, oh, they're just doing studies upon studies upon studies. It would seem like some of the decision-making process is not necessarily on flawed science, but on science that maybe didn't take a big enough picture. So that's where, is that sort of where it is right now? Where NOAA is saying, look, we don't need to do any more studies. We've got a study. This is our decision.
I think they're always continuing to look at the science, but I think in the making their decision now, that's what they've come up with. And they've, but again, this is a proposed rule, and that's why the council looked at it closely, and they came out with these recommendations, and we've submitted our letter. And so, you know, I think there's a lot that can be improved in their review, and that's where the council recommended that there needs to be a closer look at this idea of maintaining status quo, and
would,
if anything...
Would that mean, Asuka, that the ideal thing would be to delay the ultimate decision a little bit for more science?
That was part of part of it was
because I know they're trying to make it. They're trying to enact this, right?
Yeah, and so under the ESA, they do usually have to come up with a decision 12 months after they come up with a proposed decision, but they can also take a 6-month extension to that final rule.
Do we want that?
So, with the council in our letter, we have the council did request for that and said, "Look, there's a lot of scientific issues in the proposed rule, and they that the government should be looking at this a little bit more closely and." Examine it. And they've actually taken that exemption before when the whole coral proposed rule came up. If you remember several years back, they proposed listing several species of coral in Hawaii and also across the Pacific Islands. And ultimately, there was a lot of scientific gaps as well in that proposal. They went back and looked at it. They got more information, revised their rule. And in the final rule, they didn't list any Hawaii.
Yeah. And that's coral. Why, gang, that's why don't throw your hands up in dismay and say, woe is me, all is lost. Because there still are a chance, and whether you agree with the council's decision or not is immaterial at this point, because you still have an opportunity to voice your opinion. And so one of the reasons why we wanted to convene today with Asuka was that that window of opportunity is closing. So what we need to do is get you motivated, in other words, light a fire under and tell you how to voice your concern. First of all, how can people get a better picture of it? Can they go to the NOAA website and then to the council, wpcouncil.org? Where can people, you know, get a little background so they can voice their opinion, and then how do they do that?
So we have some links on our website at wpcouncil.org. There's additional information on the NOAA website, which you can link through our website. So go to the news and updates section on WP Council, and you can find that information. You can also give us a call if you can't find that. We can help you out. And then, like Mike mentioned, you mentioned the comment period right now has been extended to September 25th. That's two Fridays from now.
Yep.
And so that gives folks a bit more time to think about this and if they really have an opinion about it.
But let me tell you something. Yeah. It may seem that way, and Asuka's being very kind. I'm telling you, get on this now, because these 2 weeks will disappear. And the problem is that even the best, you know, comment or question or, you know, assertive vote or negative vote, if it's after the process, it's use or lose, you lose, you know.
And this is an opportunity to do it. And originally, the comment period was supposed to close back in June. And there's been several extensions, primarily because in Saipan, there was a typhoon. And those folks requested for an extension for the comment period.
And we've been dodging the bullet for months.
Absolutely. But I think it, you know, provides an opportunity for folks in Hawaii, too, to take that extra time and really look at it.
Well, I kind of think that, first of all, when we talk about the council being a bottoms-up organization, it truly is, and that everybody sees when they come to our Fishers Forum. So I'm hoping that a listener that maybe not as up to speed as some others, that the council's decision was not one made on emotion or anything else. It was just after a good look at it, you decided, well, we need to have a waiver. We're doing a little bit better than they think we are, and the only way that's going to happen is if people voice their concerns and NOAA agrees.
Yeah, and we really rely on our scientific experts to give us direction on these comments, and that's what we've done. And so, and based on all of this review that we have done, science is telling us that the population is doing fine. When you look at the information more carefully, there are really not a lot of threats that would drive them to extinction in the near future.
Are we missing anything? Do you think that people have now, based on maybe listening today and then going to WPCouncil.org or to the NOAA link, that they can say, you know what, even if you didn't think you wanted to get involved, just go take a look at this because your input is requested.
Yeah, and I think
and maybe
one more
even
thing,
required.
Yeah, one more thing I wanted folks to know is, I think you were starting to touch upon it earlier, is when NOAA Fisheries and Fish and Wildlife Service lists species as threatened, they don't always have to apply the take prohibition.
Ah, okay.
And that's an important thing in the ESA, it doesn't happen often, but there's been some examples of doing that where they've taken the discretion and said, we're going to provide some exemptions to the take.
Mm-hmm.
And a good example of that is ESA-listed salmon populations on the West Coast.
Okay,
There are ESA-listed salmon that are harvested as part of fisheries. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of hoops that they have to jump through in terms of having additional management plans and all this and that. But it shows that NOAA Fisheries recognizes that there can be some take as you're reaching, going for recovery.
Yeah, and what you're talking about there is primarily cultural, you know, even maybe sustenance, you know. And so, but we want to make sure that at no point in time do you think that we were advocating or suggesting a commercial take of green sea turtles. I mean,
that's
they're not likely to be on a menu in Waikiki, you know.
I don't think anybody's asking for that
I don't
at this
think so
point.
Either.
And it's probably, you know, not a direction we need to be going.
Go ahead.
But I think this example of the salmon and this idea of getting an exemption is, you know, if NOAA Fisheries and Fish and Wildlife Service decide to maintain Honu as listed as threatened, that's another thing that, you know, that should be considered. And that's that was part of the council's comments that, look, if you do decide to keep this as the threatened species, you need to consider this take exemption because ESA allows for it and there's a need for it and there it could be actually helpful to the population.
Yeah, that's the bottom line, isn't it?
For managing.
Always a joy to see you. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And thank you for listening to the program today. If you got a comment or a care, you know what to do. But by the way, if you want to learn more about this green sea turtle issue, I really encourage you to go to WPCouncil.org and find it. And if you can't find it, call them up. But I know you can click and find it. And I want to thank you for listening to the program today and let you know we'll be back again next time. Have a great rest of your weekend. We'll see you on the other side. Aloha.